Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast.
Okay, welcome everybody to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I am, of course, your host, Coach Rob, and I have a great, great podcast for you today. Podcast number 52 being recorded on February 19th, 2015. And in today's podcast, we're going to discuss analyzing your cycling season. Sounds a little bit odd, being that it's coming, being recorded on the 19th of February, and probably coming out on the 20th or 21st, but it actually has a lot of value right now to you. But before I get into all of that content, I'm going to go ahead and go through a couple of announcements here for you. Number one, the website, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog, the episode show notes receptacle for this and every other episode of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, my online training plan store, including my modular training plans, my high-intensity trainer workouts, my Zone 4, 5, 6 power testing, etc., is all located at tailwind-coaching.com. So head on over there and take a look at all that stuff. And while you're there, if you're in the market to purchase anything, take a look at my sponsors. You can find their links in the menu bar on the very top of any page of the website. Those sponsors, when you click through and purchase from them, contribute a couple of pennies to the hosting and bandwidth costs of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast and, of course, tailwind-coaching.com. And that helps me bring you further and further free content. Those sponsors, of course, Road ID will speak for you when you are unable to. If the worst should happen, you find yourself in a ditch somewhere, at least the paramedics or the police will be able to get in touch with your loved ones and let them know that you're okay. The Sufferfest, Dave McQuillan over there is, he's a sadistic son of a bitch, I'll be honest with you. The Sufferfest is a really a great program. Sounds odd for someone who's a coach and a training plan, you know, offering training plans and coaching to say this, but the workouts are well designed and the video is top notch and the music is just really, really excellent. They're a great substitute for one of my hard workout days if you're just not feeling sitting on the trainer and staring at the latest episode of House of Cards or what have you. So give them a check for $15. You can get a good solid hour workout that will pretty much kick your ass. U.S. Wellness Meats for hormone-free grass-fed, excellent sources of protein that will not put a bunch of crap in your body. Check them out. The Bulletproof Exec to biohack your way into better health and possibly some performance enhancements, which you can read about in some of my blog posts under biohacking. And of course, Coach Rob's Amazon store, which has my recommended training tools, my Garmin devices that I recommend, recommended supplements and things like that. I always advocate purchasing from your local bike shop first and foremost, but sometimes when you just can't find what you're looking for there, Amazon's a great, great, great second option. So if you click through from the website, they throw me a few pennies for the hosting costs of this podcast. If you are looking to get a hold of me, head on over to the website, again, tailwind-coaching.com, and the upper right on the right-hand sidebar, there will be a pane or a panel where you can follow me in any number of ways, from Strava, from RSS feed, from Stitcher, from email, email address of coachrobdc@gmail.com, Facebook page at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, and of course, coachrobdc on Twitter. I also encourage you while you're there to subscribe to the Tailwind Coaching newsletter. Tailwind Coaching newsletter actually will give you the occasional free workout, lots of free training tips, and it'll give you a weekly rundown on new topics on the Tailwind coaching page and the Daily Grind Cycling Journal blog. Those of you who have subscribed will have noticed you got an email this past week with some other things that I learned from Jens Vogt and after meeting him in New Jersey. And it's a couple of interesting points. That's the kind of tips you're going to get from the Tailwind Coaching newsletter. So head on over there and sign up for that. I definitely encourage that. While you're on tailwind-coaching.com, or if you're on this particular blog post on the website, please, please, please head on over to iTunes. There is a link in the blog post. And rate this podcast. Please, please, please rate it 5 stars. It helps me move up the ranks. It helps me get a little bit more exposure, reach a few more people. The more people I'm able to reach, the more people I'm able to get this information to. I'm able to help them enjoy riding their bikes more. And honestly, I give out free advice. I set the Tailwind Coaching podcast out there as a free podcast, mainly because, I'll be honest with you, I love helping people ride their bikes. All right. I couldn't imagine what my life was like without cycling. And my goal is to get everybody that I can out there to enjoy cycling as much as I do. And typically, the better you're riding, the faster you're riding, the fitter you are, the more you enjoy, the more you enjoy your cycling. So go ahead, rate that podcast podcast on iTunes 5 stars, please. And that'll help me reach a few more people. One more quick announcement here. Remember my training plans that are available. I've got modular plans in the form of my raw strength module, which will have you in the gym building raw muscular strength. The advanced base module, which a couple of people have noted is a really, really tough base module designed for those who are a little bit more advanced in their training. And of course, my training plan support, if you're looking to get the brain of a coach for a minimal investment, go ahead, purchase one of my training plans, my modular plans, whatever you like. Go ahead and add training plan support. For $30 a month, you get access to my coaching brain for all the help that you might need from a one-on-one coaching session, but without somebody who's up your butt all the time trying to pick on your numbers and everything else. So it's the coaching brain without the cost and without me writing a custom plan for you, which is where a lot of the time comes in, I'll be honest with you. Additionally, there are new discussion forums over at tailwind-coaching.com for training plan discussion, for general nutrition and physiology discussion, for general discussion, etc., etc. Head on over to the website, click on forums at the, I think it's discussion forums, actually, at the top, on the top menu bar there, and you can start posting on those. Anybody who is registered should be able to post on those without a problem. If you are not, make sure you shoot me an email so I can figure that out. And those of you who are not registered on the website, you will not be able to post there until you do register. So go ahead, please do register and start some discussions over there. Looking forward to seeing what you guys are really talking about and really want to hear about from me. And don't forget, there is a discount code at the end of this podcast post on the website. So if you're looking for a discount code for any of my training plans, anything in my training plan store, go over to tailwind-coaching.com, search for this episode. It's going to be called Analyzing Your Season, podcast number 52, and there is a discount code included at the end of this post. All right, all of that stuff out of the way, let's move on and let's talk about analyzing your season, especially how it can be useful to you in February. All right, analyzing your season in February. Why are we analyzing our season in February? Well, let me be honest with you. At this point in the season, you should have already planned out your season goals. Now, I went over this way back in podcast number 30, I believe it was, and that podcast was planning your season. And in that podcast, I included, I walked you through, really, planning your season using my my hand-built season planning worksheet, which is an Excel worksheet. I believe it's in a .xlsx maybe format. Either way, it's an Excel spreadsheet or an Excel worksheet, which basically sets up your training weeks, and it allows you to insert A races, B races, C races, training months, training weeks, training blocks, etc., etc. If you're looking for some help on planning your season, you haven't done it yet, first of all, what the hell are you doing? Hurry up. You're running out of time to plan your season effectively. And number two, if you're looking for that worksheet, I'm going to have a link to the worksheet in the episode show notes. I will also have a link to that podcast. I believe it's podcast number 30. Let me check right here. I actually should have it. Podcast number 30, yeah. I'm going to have both links, links to those in the episode show notes. So, again, head on over to the website and check that out, and you'll be able to find those. But anyway, planning your season, at this point in your season, unless you are racing the Spring Classics type events, something like Bat and Kill, for example, you're going to be just finishing up with your base season. And of course, this applies mostly if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, in the United States, in England, in Europe. I know I have quite a number of listeners in England and in Europe. How you guys doing? Hope it's not as cold over there as it is over here in the northeast of the U.S. I also have a number of athletes that listen, a number of listeners, a number of customers in the Southern Hemisphere, New Zealand and Australia. For you guys, this is going to be a little bit more appropriate as you hit, for example, October, I believe, since you guys are sort of on the other side of the earth at this point. Probably October, about the end of your base period, whenever that's going to be. I probably should have figured that out and written it down, but you guys get the idea. I'm sure somebody will correct me. Shoot me an email if you really want to correct me, or post on the forums if you really want to correct me, or post a comment on this blog post. But anyway, we need to be setting our goals. And at this point, we've already set our goals. We've already planned out our season. We know where our A, B, C races are going to be, and we know where our training blocks are going to be. And for most of us, we are in the midst or near the end of our base fitness building phase. Okay, as we've gone through in the, I believe it's podcast number 51, effective base building, we talked about the best way to build your fitness in your base phase. So, if we're just finishing with our base phase, why are we reflecting on our season now? I'll tell you why. Because as we finish our base phase and move into our build phase, we really need to reassess the goals that we set at the beginning of the season. All right? We also need to reassess our previous season. And the reason why we do this is we need to be able to tailor our build period, our peak period, and our what I call our special skills periods, training blocks, in order to attack our weaknesses from last season. Okay, so let's start with last season so far. All right, let's think about what our goals were. Remember, there are three goals basically at the top of our training plan worksheet. We want to know, did we meet those goals? Did we not meet those goals? Were they too lofty in terms of goals? Were they too easy in terms of goals? Did we meet all of them in the first half of the season and then have nothing left to shoot for the end? Did we meet none of them because we set them too high? And did somebody out there strive to win a professional race when they're only a Cat 4? All right. That would be way too lofty, for example. All right. If you did accomplish those goals, ask yourself, what did you do well in your quest in accomplishing them? Also, ask yourself, what could you have improved upon to make it easier to meet those goals? All right? Those are two questions that really, really need to be asked. And it really takes a critical eye to sit there and say, you know what? I did accomplish everything, but what could I have done better? All right? Most people are not very good at being critical of their successes. It's very easy to be critical of our failures because we have something to look at and say, I didn't do this. Now you're looking at it and you're telling yourself, man, I did really well. I did this. I accomplished what I set out to do. But how did I screw that up? Okay. That's where you need to be at this point. That's what you need to be thinking about with last season's goals. Right? And of course, if you did not succeed in those goals, you have to ask yourself, where did you fail in that attempt? Where were you unable to complete those goals? And what kept you from succeeding? All right. The things that kept you from succeeding and the things that made it harder for you to succeed are basically your weaknesses. Those are the weaknesses that you need to attack in this build phase, this peak phase. And of course, if you have enough time and you're not working under constraints, those special skills that you're going to build into your training plan, those are the weaknesses that you need to plan around. And that is exactly why we are analyzing our season right now, as opposed to earlier on in the year or at the end of last year. Now, granted, most people do a cursory season analysis at the end of a year and they say, geez, I did pretty good. And they pat themselves on the back. You know, that was me patting myself on the back. I accomplished most of my goals last year. I did very, very well with my plans last year. But I'm not above sitting there and saying things that I need to work on. All right. Once you've analyzed last year's goals, you need to analyze your overall season objectives, both from last year and from this year. And at this point, we need to sort of combine these two. You need to look at last year, your overall season objectives. Did you meet those season objectives? Again, if you did, what did you do well in accomplishing those and meeting those? What could you have improved upon? If you did not, where did you fail in your attempt to meet those overall season objectives? Okay. When you're asking yourself if you failed, were those objectives even reachable? All right. You may have an objective, if you're a Cat 4 racer, you may have an objective to reach Cat 3. Is that even reachable based on your local racing scene? In many cases, that's not. There's just too many strong people and you're not going to get the points to do it. All right. But the bottom line is once you have all of these little quirks, these little things that have either made your life difficult in reaching your goals or prevented you from reaching or achieving your season objectives, how can you take those little problems and work on them and build them? How can you take those weaknesses and turn them into strengths? All right. That's exactly the reason why we are analyzing our season right now. And that's exactly what you're going to have to do before you actually initialize a build plan for your next 2 to 3 to 4 months. Now, if you're like me and you're like many, many of the racers in the Northeast, okay, racing is going to really start to ramp up around April. I know if I remember my season planning worksheet off the top of my head, I'm looking at starting sea level races, probably the first weekend of April, if I remember correctly. So I know I have a training camp in the end of March, which is a fantastic plug, by the way. You can check my Twitter feed for some information on that. Training camp in Lambertville, New Jersey, put on by Pure Energy Cycling. Going to be taught by Bobby Lee and Matt Baranowski, who are currently right now at the UCI World Championships, the Track World Championships over in France. And also Jackie Symes, who is a multi-time Olympian and national champion on the track. So check that out. It's going to be pretty cool. But I digress anyway. Once you've planned your season, if you're looking at a season like I am now, if I'm starting racing in April with my major goals in May and June, I have basically March and April as build months. May, part of May is a build month. Part of it is a peak month. So I have about 2.5 months to play with in terms of time that I'm going to be able to work on my weaknesses. Right. And not only am I going to work on the weaknesses that kept me from achieving goals last year, kept me from achieving season objectives last year, I'm going to work on the weaknesses that made it difficult for me to achieve those season objectives and those season goals. Okay. And we're going to talk about how to analyze your performances last year to figure out what you need to work on right after a real quick break. Okay, welcome back here again. Now we're going to be analyzing our performances from last season. Now, a real preface to this. I'm looking at this from a racing standpoint. Okay. Now, I know there's a whole lot of you out there that are not pinning on a number each weekend. You're not lining up. You're not throwing elbows in a crit. You're not road racing. You're not mountain bike racing. You're not crit racing, whatever. All of this applies to those of you who are racing Grand Fondos, okay? Because it's in the spirit of it, you are indeed racing, all right? All of this applies to those of you who are simply using training advice and planning your season around a couple of group rides or a couple of event rides or things like that, okay? If you are setting a goal for something, now listen to me because this is very, very important. If you're setting a goal for something, you need to analyze your performance of that goal in order to be better at it next year or next week or next month or whatever the case may be. All right. So just because I use the term racing, and a couple of people have emailed me about this, just because I use the term racing does not necessarily mean that it only applies to bike racers. All right. There's plenty of information that really applies to Grand Fondo riders, to group riders, etc., etc. And of course, all of this will certainly help improve your Grand Fondo performance, improve your group ride performance, improve your charity ride performance. I had a couple of people email me who were talking about doing the Live Strong Century, being their first century, and how would this stuff apply since I'm not racing? You know what? You are racing. It's a time trial against yourself. You're racing for time. Sure, you don't get a prize for it. You don't get, you know, accolades for, well, the Live Strong thing, you do get quite a bit of, you know, there's a lot of fanfare amount about it, but be that as it may, it's a time against yourself, and everybody wants to finish in their best time, so remember that, all right? It's not all about racing, but I'm going to talk about it as a racing-type paradigm, okay? That being said, now, analyzing your performances from last season, the first thing we want to take a look at, we want to take a look at our racing, all right? We want to look at even our sea level races, folks. Those of you who are racing with a set ABC schedule, your sea level races are they're just dramatically important. They're grossly important to your performance. They are a huge opportunity for you to get training stress, to work with teammates, to shake out the cobwebs, to blow out the dust, whatever you want to call it. And there is absolutely nothing like racing, performance, fondos, whatever. For those of you who are not racers, there's nothing like racing to expose your weaknesses and confirm your strengths. And let me tell you, what the typical thing that happens is somebody goes out, somebody races, and they say, holy shit, pardon the French, holy shit, I'm really good at X, Y, or Z. Now, I'm really good at pulling the pack along for that last lap, all right? And they decide their chance of winning is break away in the last lap and cross the finish line alone. That might work once. That might not even work once because especially in the lower cats, people never let you get away. That's one thing for certain. However, if you're good at it, you're going to do it more. All right, you're going to do it more and hope that doing more of what you're good at will mask what you're not good at. All right, that is the problem with human nature. We don't want to fail. We don't like doing things that hurt us. Those of you who subscribe to the Tailwind Coaching newsletter will be getting bells ringing right about now based on last week's newsletter. So there you go. Another reason to subscribe to that newsletter. Anyway, racing, even the sea level races, exposes your weaknesses and confirms your strength. It's up to you to understand what your weaknesses, what your strengths are, play to your, work on your weaknesses, I should say, and then play to your strengths. All right. Don't stop working on your strengths. Otherwise, they won't be strengths anymore. However, work on your weaknesses so that you become more well-rounded and well-balanced. All right. Now, that being said, the main things you need to look out for when you are analyzing your performances, races, fondos, charity rides, group rides, whatever it is. Number one, and this is where some people go very, very wrong, endurance. Endurance seems like the most basic thing that you can deal with, right? And it is, in a way, it's the most basic thing you can do. It's the most basic performance aspect that you have, especially if you've been riding for a long period of time. But I will be perfectly honest with you. If you struggle to cross the finish line, period, not just, oh, I struggled to cross the finish line strong. I'm saying if you struggle to cross the finish line, period, you really might need to look at improving your aerobic capacity. This typically applies a lot more to people who are novice riders, new to the sport of cycling. It typically also applies to people who don't train with any significant volume. All right. Those of you who are listening to my podcast regularly, those of you who are frequent readers of my blog will know I subscribe to that minimum effective dose training philosophy. The idea that there is a minimally effective dose of training that will give you the same benefits as riding for 12, 14, 15, 18, 20 hours a week on your bike at low intensity. There definitely is a certain intensity and a certain volume, so basically a certain training dose, which gives you the same benefits as long, slow base miles. Interestingly enough, there is indeed a need for some volume. If you've never ridden 100 miles, your maximum ride is 30 miles, for example. If you haven't ridden more than 30 miles all season, the chances of you going out and riding 100 miles comfortably, powerfully, and finishing without being completely spent are slim to none. All right? Because number one, your ass just can't handle sitting in the saddle for that long. Number two, you've built your body to survive for 30 miles. And usually you can basically crank out twice your longest ride. All right, that's 60 miles. You still got 40 more to go, guys. That's a lot to go. All right. Your body's just not set up to do it yet. All right. So those of you who are criterium racers, myself included, get out there and do some longer distance riding. You're going to need it if you're planning to do any kind of longer distance work. Additionally, you can pile on some training stress. You can get some good neurological or neuromuscular skills built during that. All right. Just go out and add it, maybe once a week. All right. However, now if you're struggling to cross a finish line, particularly in a fondo, in a charity ride, whatever, it's not always the case that you do need to improve your aerobic capacity. Again, it could simply be training frequency. It could be duration. It could be intensity. There's a whole number of things that could be at play here. But typically when someone tells me I struggle beyond 60 miles, okay, and I've had a number of people say that, you know, I struggle after 60 miles. 60 miles is no joke, man. 60 miles is a lot of work. 100 miles is a lot more work. Very typically they are a novice cyclist. They're new to cycling. They may have great form. They may have great power. They may have great skill. They just don't have the aerobic base built yet. Okay, so keep that in real mind. Next thing that you're going to be analyzing from all of your events, from your races, you're going to analyze your climbing performance. All right. Now, this is very apropos. Even on group rides, this is an apropos thing for you to consider and to look at on your group rides. And I'm assuming, as a sidebar here, I'm assuming all of you are taking decent notes on your group rides, on your training, on your racing, et cetera, so that you're actually able to look back and notice what happened. Where did you get blown out the back of the group? Where did you struggle on that group ride? What was the hardest part of that fondo? Was it the last climb? Was it the first climb? What was it? But I digress, of course. Climbing performance. If you find that you are having to spin your way up climbs, All right. Especially later on in an event. If you find that you're having to slam it into the granny gear and twiddle those legs as fast as they can go just so you can get up that climb, even if it can't stay with a pack, just so you can get up the climb, my real guess for you is you probably need a little bit more muscular endurance. All right. You're burning out your body earlier on in the ride, in the race, in the fondo, and you're basically having to rely on your aerobic system to carry the load for the rest of the way. And once your muscular endurance is shot, once you've exceeded that amount of muscular endurance, you're not going to get it back. It's not something that you can recover while you're really on the bike. You are going to have to rely on that aerobic system to carry the day. And let me tell you, the aerobic system will not carry the day very quickly. Sure, you can plug away and get there at some point, but it's not going to get you there very quickly. If you want to go with any kind of gusto, you need that muscular endurance and you need it to last. Now, on the opposite side, if you find you can mash it uphill, all right, and you're extremely good at hammering it, but you can't change the pace much uphill, you're a one-speed climber. You're what Jens Vogt would call a diesel climber. Then generally you need to work on your neuromuscular skills, all right? I have talked many, many, many times about the ability for your body to range your leg speed between 15 RPM, plus or minus 15 RPM from your sweet spot cadence, all right? To figure out your sweet spot cadence, go out, you do your FTP test, you do your lactate threshold test, whatever test you're doing, whether it's mine or somebody else's. Look at your cadence. I'm assuming you have a computer that records your cadence. Or most people are using a Garmin these days, or they're using a smartphone app like a Wahoo Fitness or one of those, which should record your cadence for you. If you're not using that, then I don't know what to tell you. You're going to be a little bit in the dark here. Welcome to the Stone Age, folks. No, I'm kidding. If you go out, you do your lactate threshold test, your functional threshold power test, whatever, whether it's mine, whether it's somebody else's, whether it's on trainerroad.com, wherever it is, look at your cadence. Look at the cadence that you maintained, the average for that effort. The average cadence you maintain for that effort will basically be your sweet spot cadence. That's what your body has shown you it prefers to pedal at, right? Granted, if your sweet spot cadence is like 70, you got to do some work to raise that a little bit. Granted, it may be a little bit more efficient for you. However, you'll need to be able to range a little bit more. All right, ranging your cadence, ranging your leg speed is grotesquely important, especially for group rides and especially for races, so that you can basically stay with changes of pace in the pack. All right. In terms of the plus or minus 15 concept, again, just as a quick sidebar and going over that real quick, find your sweet spot cadence. Once you've found that sweet spot, all you have to do is add 15. That's what you should be able to easily spin your legs up to in pretty much any gear. I do mean any gear. Even if you're in a 5311, if you can't spin that up there, you got some problems. All right? And you should be able to drop it down 15 RPM and comfortably pedal at sweet spot cadence minus 15 RPM, again, in any gear. All right. Those of you who are having trouble with that, those of you who are unable to do that, lack a very significant and very necessary set of neuromuscular skills that you really, really need to be an effective cyclist. All right. So you need to work on that. That is a huge, huge weakness, a huge limiter, and just improving that will save you energy. Okay, it will save you excess psychological stress when you see a gap open in front of your wheel, and it will save you a lot of shifting, a lot of standing, a lot of jumping out of the saddle. All right, so that's something you really need to basically fix. And I'm not even saying work on, I'm saying fix. That's an important one. All right, one of the other questions you're going to ask yourself: how polished were you? How polished did you feel? Did you feel like you were fighting the bike the whole time? Did you feel like you were all over the machine? You know, you've heard Phil Liggett and Paul Sherwin, despite the fact they can't stand them, coin a phrase of, you know, he's wrestling with his machine, he's fighting with his bike, he's everywhere, he's all over the machine. that kind of jerky, inefficient, unpolished writing is indicative of a couple of things. Number one, it's indicative of somebody who's tired. If you ever heard the term pedaling squares, where it's your pedal stroke goes from smooth and supple and beautifully, the souplesse that the French talk about. Lucien Van Impe was one of the best pedalers in the world. Marco Bentani was also one of the best pedalers in the world. Watch the videos of him or Van Impe. They just float on the pedals. It's incredible. But pedaling squares, the shoulders rocking, the hips rocking, the head nodding back and forth. These are things that indicate someone who is either tired. And in more cases than not, it does mean they are just completely blown up and they're basically bleeding from their eyeballs to stay in contact. Or it could simply mean you need more neuromuscular work and more pack work, more pack experience, more handling work, more handling skills so that you can more efficiently match changes in pace in a group or pack situation. All right. All too often I see, and this is actually particularly true of mountain bikers, I see mountain bikers come off a mountain bike and they start riding their road bike. And they generally ride a road bike like they would a mountain bike, throwing it back and forth, a lot of upper body motion, a lot of leveraging the bars. Let me tell you, it's all wasted energy, folks. There's no need to be doing it. You can save more energy with a nice, calm upper body, shoulders relaxed, hands not death gripping the bars, core nice and tight, neck nice and relaxed, not bobbling from side to side, but just basically steering the course ahead. And let all of that force, let all the power, let all the energy just simply come through your legs, not your hands, not your arms, not your biceps, not your triceps, not your pecs. There's no need for any of that, right? The best, the fastest are the ones who have that ultra quiet upper body that don't waste any energy and everything goes into powering the bike forward. So, were you tired? If you were tired, did you feel like you were ragged and you're all over the place? You need to work on your endurance a little bit, possibly. You need to work on your muscular endurance, possibly. Depends. Were you cramping? You need to work on your muscular endurance for sure. You may need more neuromuscular work. You may just be trying to pedal too fast, right? You may need more pack handling work, more group handling work. Were you nervous? Were you gripping the bars real tight and just twitchy? And that's something else you need to consider. And if that's the case, that's something you need to get out and you need to work on. My recommendation for handling skills and drills, get yourself out to a grassy field with a couple other people. Practice pushing each other. Practice elbowing each other. Practice leaning on each other. All right, nice and slow. Practice overlapping wheels. Obviously, don't overlap the drive side, for the love of God. I actually have seen somebody in a video practicing that and overlap a drive side and ping, break a whole bunch of spokes and crash themselves. Don't do that, please. You're being warned here. Don't do that. Go out, do the work, do it in a grassy field. If you fall, you fall. Big deal. You get a little bit of dirt on you. You get maybe a grass stain or two. Go home and shout it out. All right. But do the work, do the drills, do the skills so that you're able to be comfortable in a group, nice and relaxed. The more relaxed you are, the more supple you are, the faster you're going to be, the more efficient you're going to be, and the safer you're going to be. And that's a huge, huge importance. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. And I'm going to come back with a really very specific few items that we need to take a look at. All right, lastly here, we're going to talk about a couple of more specific things. This one, those of you who are criterium racers are going to find this extremely valuable, but pretty much anybody who is dealing with group rides, group situations, is going to find this very, very significant. Some things that I've been asked, and I've been asked both from a couple of teammates, a couple of people who are racing abroad, and actually a number of people who their primary focus is efficient and effective group riding. And really, these skills are put to the absolute test in a criterium type situation. However, you can apply these to pretty much any group situation, especially a group situation that's more than a couple of people involved in it. Cornering is a huge, huge indicator of your strengths and weaknesses as a cyclist, whether it's cornering 90-degree corners, broad sweeping corners, what have you, following another line through a corner, etc., etc. Number one thing to ask yourself, in your previous objectives, in your previous races, your fondos, your group rides, did you ever struggle coming out of corners? All right. Were you having trouble? Did you have to stand up, shift up, and fire through the gears and hammer it in order to get back on the wheel in front of you? All right. That could mean a couple of different things. Number one, it could mean you need some more neuromuscular work. You need to be able to range your leg speed a little bit before. And this is what I was talking about earlier on, in which you really need to be able to range that leg speed in order to add or subtract power with just a little bit of change of your legs, right? Without having to shift, because if you have to shift, you have to hesitate for a split microsecond. You have to stand up, and that takes time, and that's time that you could be using to be on the wheel in the draft instead of trying to get back to it, all right? It could also mean you need more flat-out power work. You just need to be able to push harder out of the corner. And in that case, you need to be doing more of those high, high, high intensity intervals, right? If you're feeling that you can push hard through those corners, but again, you have to shift to stay with it, that's a pretty good indication to me that you need some more of that speed work, some more of that leg speed work. You need some more neuromuscular work, things like that. If you're able to spin those legs right up and you can, you know, you might be able to get up to 140, 150 RPM, but you find that you just cannot do it with any significant gearing, with any significant force on the pedals. You need more force work, all right? You need to be able to push those gears, those huge gears, for a longer period of time. You need more muscular endurance work. You need to be able to handle that more significant time under tension. Very likely, you're just not able to handle that time under tension, and your body's just fatiguing. Right. If you are finding that you have to hit the brakes, or you're fearful of what's coming up, or the corners are too sharp or too whatever for you, that is a big, big indication that you need to start working on your cornering skills. Now, cornering skills are a really, really tough one here. Cornering skills are very individual to each person. Some people like to stick the inside knee out. Some people keep it tucked in. Almost everybody has to drop that outside pedal to 90 degrees to avoid striking the inside pedal. Some people prefer to lean the body a little bit more. People prefer to counter steer with the inside hand. There's a lot of different techniques in there, and there's a lot of different things that are nearly impossible to teach you by just listening to a podcast. All right. That's one of those things that you have to get out and you have to explain it and have to be taught it. All right. Preferably by somebody who is a professional. Another plug for that training camp, just in case. No, I'm kidding. I will eventually at some point do a post on cornering skills. I just need to get the time together and get the ambition together to do the diagrams and do the very careful analysis of it so that I can make it as easy for people to understand as possible, because there is a significant number of people that still break in the apex of a curve. I see it all the time on group rides, and it drives me nuts. All right, because if I'm cruising and carving through a turn, I sure as hell don't want somebody hitting the brakes halfway through. You know what I mean? So if it's a technique type issue, spend the time, work on the technique. All right, set up cones in a parking lot, get some good head of steam going, and then start carving corners. That's the easiest way to understand how to do it properly. All right. And finally, it's a little bit more nebulous. Part of the topic here, but it is a topic that really needs to be covered nonetheless. Did you suffer with your training plan? And I'm not going to try and sell training plans for this, folks. I'm really, really not trying to sell anything here. I mean, there's always a plug. I always appreciate it when you use my training plans, and the feedback that I get from them is fantastic. People do wonderful, wonderful things with it. But it's not going to be a, 10-minute sales pitch for a training plan. It's simply something to think about, and it's an important thing to think about, is thinking about your training plan. And this is where having a power meter will help you so much. All right, having a power meter will help so much. If you do have a power meter, you're going to be able to basically determine from an objective standpoint what metrics led you to your best performances. And I'm talking using a performance management chart to chart out your acute training load, your chronic training load, your training stress balance, your intensity factors, your watt prime, your functional threshold, your mean maximal power graphs. You name it, you can chart it out. All right. But the take-home message here is simply that if you're using a power meter, or alternatively, you're using something like Sporttrax that has that training impulse chart to it, which I did use for a number of years before I switched to power training. You can evaluate your training, your racing, and your recovery. You can evaluate what serves you better, significant volume, significant intensity, or a combination of both. You can determine how much recovery is necessary in between high-intensity bouts. You can determine how much recovery is necessary before a major event. You can determine at what training stress balance you perform the best. All right. And here's a perfect example. For years and years and years, I used to taper for a week for a major event until I realized that a positive training stress balance does me absolutely no good. No good. I feel weak. I feel tired. The legs don't want to turn over. If I race on a negative training stress balance, like say -7, when in a build phase or a peak phase, you should be, let's go build phase. In a hard build block, you may find a training stress balance, negative training stress balance of 25, 30, 40, depending on how much work you're doing. I found that a -6, -7, anywhere between maybe 4 and 7, I raced amazingly well. Anything more than that, and I felt tired. Anything less than that, and I just felt like crap. All right? Even positive training stress, I felt like crap. So that's one tool you can use to really gauge your recovery, your intensity, and what goes right for you in your training plan. All right? However, you can't only go by the performance management chart of the PMC. You have to go by feel, all right? If you're really, really fatigued, all right, for 3 weeks after a significant build or racing block, and you feel like you need 3 weeks just to recover, you went way too hard. It doesn't matter what your performance management chart is telling you. It doesn't matter what your training stress balance is telling you. You went way too hard, and you're in a hole that you need to be dug out of. All right, so keep that in mind as well, that that's something you really need to think about. And you really need to be charting your performances. You really need to be charting how you feel in your performances in order to correlate those factors. All right, you'll be able to really, really very quickly tell that volume works for you, intensity works for you, what balance of volume and intensity versus recovery works very well for you. You'll be able to tell that not enough of either one of those may give you perfect training legs, but poor racing legs. All right, this is actually really the scenario where somebody, I feel great in my training, I'm ready to kick ass out there, and they go and they get blown off the back in the first lap. All right, I see it happen, folks. It does happen. Or they go to a group ride and they get shelled in the first 10 miles. All right, these are typically the people who are fooling themselves. They're saying, geez, my training is so good. My legs feel so good in training. They're really not working hard enough in training. All right? They may not understand that they need the intensity in order to make your body respond. All right? Maybe they're doing 4 or 5 hours on a bike, but they're only doing zone 2, zone 2.5, maybe zone 3 work. All right, their legs feel great. And sure, your performance management chart, your chronic training load's going to go up. Your acute training load's going to go up. Your training stress balance is going to go down. All right? That doesn't mean you're going to be performance fit. It means you rode a lot of miles. And it means you can ride a lot of miles. It doesn't mean shit about riding a lot of miles really fast or keeping up with a group. Again, pardon the language, but it's just how it is. All right. Review your performance chart. Review your actual racing diary or your performance diaries to how you felt. All right. Review your peaks. As I said, it took me a long time to figure out that a negative 4 to 7 training stress balance meant I was going to kill it in a race. Review your peaks on your performance management chart. Find out what worked, find out what didn't. Correlate your peaks to the information in your diary that says, I felt great today. What were you at? Were you at -7 training stress balance? Were you at -30 training stress balance? Were you at +10? What works for you may not work for the next person, and you need to be able to tease that out, to decipher it. And of course, all of the above, again, applies to you Grand Fondo riders. It applies to you non-racers. All right. The only thing I'm going to say is it's a little bit harder. It's a little bit harder to really evaluate a training plan on a diary alone because you don't have any objective data to work with. That's why I suggest if you're serious about training, if you really want to perform on a bike, you know, do you want to ride your bike or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike? All right. If you're serious about that and you're serious about training so that you can really ride your bike, you may be considering a power meter this year. That might be what the reflection of your season ends up steering you towards so that you can more objectively gauge how you've performed and how to improve in the future. All right, folks, thank you for bearing with me. For those of you who are still with me, there's a lot of information there. Any of you that have any kind of questions whatsoever, feel free to post them on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. Feel free to post them to me on Twitter at CoachRobDC, or shoot me an email, CoachRobDC@gmail.com. And of course, if you're curious about this podcast or you're curious about something in the podcast, feel free to post it on the Tailwind Coaching forums. All right, that's what they're there for, and that's what I'm hoping is that people who are going to be willing to ask a question, there's going to be somebody else out there who has a similar question. So go ahead and post it away, and I will be lurking on there to answer questions wherever possible. All right, so folks, again, thank you for listening. Don't forget, head on over to tailwind-coaching.com, rate the podcast on iTunes, and look in the episode show notes for this episode number 52 for your regular discount code for the Tailwind Coaching online training plan store. Folks, I want you to ride safe. I want you to ride happy. I want you to keep the shiny side up. I want you to keep the rubber side down. I want you to think about your next season and kick ass when you start training this season. I will be talking to you all real soon.